Columbus Blue Jackets fueled by a three-goal first period, two shorthanded goals in the game, and a sparkling performance by Elvis Merzlikins register a 5-1 victory over the Bruins.
They fire Monty yet?
Not yet. I think the Bruins are waiting for something else. Maybe Celtics-Cavs tonight. Good one at the Garden, 7 o'clock. Maybe get it around then. But as of this moment, no. He's still the head coach of the Boston Bruins.
Big game for the Celtics tonight, as you said. We're going to talk to Terp. He's going to join us in studio. Justin Turpin from WEEI.com. He'll join us at 1 o'clock. We'll get back into the Celtics. We have more with the Patriots coming up about 15 minutes from now. Tommy Curran normally joins us at high noon.
That's right.
On a Tommy Tuesday, he had to push back a little bit. So we'll do that later on this hour, plus Kiefer Madness at 12:45. I should have asked you this earlier. Scoops Keefe.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Crickets.
Ear to the ground. Crickets.
Quiet. Maybe too quiet.
A little. Thank you. I was going to say a little too quiet.
I think when you're an investigative reporter such as I, sometimes it's what's not being said.
Exactly.
And right now it is crickets.
Okay. How many phones you got just in case over there?
Three.
Three phones ready to go.
Three phones.
Schefter, Rapsheet, they have two.
They're all the same number. That's kind of useless. Actually, we have a bunch of old phones just lying around the house that the girls use. They think they're funny.
Yeah.
So they just walk around. They're like, oh, I'm on the phone. I'm calling somebody.
Why do you keep those? Are you afraid?
I don't know.
You're afraid to get rid of them?
I have some pretty risque photos.
Is
on
that
there.
What it is?
I don't want them to get in the wrong hands.
Yeah. Because they're like, you know what? The angle on that one, not flattering. If anybody saw it, like normally these pictures risque, but very tastefully done. I think you'd like them.
Right.
But if the wrong angle should fall into the wrong hands, Keith.
Somebody could call me and ask for a king's ransom. If I don't want these on the internet, I'd be in a lot of trouble.
You're reaching
behind. Why do we have to be nude, though?
Well,
you're reaching behind yourself to take that one. Interesting.
Where's your leg?
It's a bold move.
You driving a car? What is that? Is that really you? Anyway.
Because we have the old phones in the house as well. But you're working the phones at the point. Scoops Keefe is working the phones.
I'm working the phones nonstop. I got nothing. Now, the Bruins' next game, this isn't, anybody can look this up, Jones. Thursday.
Sources tell me.
Scoops, next game, Utah. Thursday night, Utah.
Yeah.
Does he coach that game? Does Jim Montgomery sit on the bench Thursday against Utah?
Should he? No. Will he? No.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
So I think today, maybe they're getting their ducks in a row. Because they also, it's easy for us or callers or whatever to say, like, get rid of Montgomery. Like, they probably need to figure out, all right, who in fact is the next guy? What's sort of the pecking order? Is it just an in-house hire? Is there anybody else out there that they've even talked to? So maybe they're getting all their ducks in a row.
But like, what have you been doing if you don't have your ducks in a row?
Yeah, you would think they would have some of that information ready to go, I guess. And then they have like a weird schedule where they have a road game on Saturday, then they're right back home on Tuesday. But I can't imagine after the game on Thursday or whenever they fly out to Detroit, you're going to put Jim Montgomery on that flight for that game. Like, that's just like, what are you doing that for?
Yeah.
He's not coming back.
I wouldn't. So is Montgomery their biggest problem? No, but he's a problem, and he's the easiest problem to fix.
Yeah.
Like, how do you fix the Jeremy Swayman problem?
You know what's crazy to me? I don't know. And so he was bad again last night.
Like, Monty's an easy fix. You just fire him. What do you do with Jeremy Swayman? So I don't know that I can answer all of the Bruins' biggest problems, but he's a problem. It's real easy to fix. So fix it.
Is this just going to be a lost season for Jeremy Swayman specifically?
If I have to answer, obviously it's early-ish.
It's a fourth of the season.
But if I have to answer, my answer would be yes.
Like, it just seems like it was such a big story all offseason. Then he shows up, and there were a lot of excuse-making early on in the season. The defense is kind of out of position. They're giving up a lot of power play goals. Like, what do you want him to do? I don't know. Mix in a save. Like, you have an opportunity to mix in a few saves. You're being paid a lot of money now, so that, they're not paying me what I'm worth. Yes, they are, and you need to kind of perform that way. Like, the pressure is on Swayman for two reasons. One, you got rid of Ullmark, who, say what you want about Ullmark in the playoffs, he at least was a really good regular season goalie while he was here.
Yep.
And then you paid him $8.25 million a year for 8 years. So you're one of the highest paid guys on the team. The pressure is now on, and he has not lived up to it. But he's not alone. He is far from alone when it comes to that. And that's why I've also seen a lot of people mad at Don Sweeney and Cam Neely for the roster, which is the roster that bad, or are the guys they have just all playing below expectation? That's what I think it is.
So it's a poorly constructed roster. I'll grant you that, but we were all pretty happy with the offseason. And I felt like it got better from a year ago. Let me answer it that
way. Okay, so I don't think it's the world's greatest roster. I'm not trying to say that, but like to say that like that is the like Sweeney's the one that should lose his job over, you know, just ripping the players or even Montgomery, right. I'm surprised by.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I like the offseason moves they made. I mean, I didn't love Zadorov, but I'm like, okay, you threw a bunch of money at a guy who was a high-priced free agent. Fine, I'll look the other way on that one. Turns out I should have dug in harder on that. Elias Lindholm, they were linked to for years. And it's like, this is the guy who's going to be a difference maker for you. And there's a lot of games where you don't notice that guy.
No, Elias Lindholm's been disappointing. But
he started good, like the first like three games. I thought that was a big addition, and I thought you could see it. Since then, he hasn't done anything.
I think Zadorov stinks. So that's been a swing and a miss.
Stinks and is constantly in the penalty box.
Yep. Charlie Coyle, I mean, this was supposed to be, I think you were hoping for a lot more out of Charlie Coyle, who has 5 points in 20 games, one assist, and he's a minus 10. So Charlie Coyle's been bad.
Not good.
Pavel Zacha's been bad.
Not good.
Because you look at last year's team, which was a playoff team and won a round in the playoffs. Their top six scorers from last year are all on the team.
Mm-hmm.
And their best goalie on the team. So, like, now how are they all of a sudden one of the worst scoring teams in the league? Pastrnak, Marchand, Coyle, Zacha, McAvoy, Frederick were the team's top six scorers. Then you have DeBrusk. Then you go to Geeky. So, like, all right, DeBrusk is gone. Is that the reason why they can't score? Because you don't have Jake DeBrusk?
I wouldn't think.
Like, he hasn't done anything in Vancouver.
Either. I mean, right. Well, no, what did they lose off last year's team? Grizzlick, DeBrusk,
Van Riemsdyk, who scored last night.
JVR scored last night. So, it's like, those are the biggest guys you lost. I feel like the roster's better than a year ago. So, look, it's not a well-constructed roster. There are flaws. And I don't want to let Sweeney and Neely off the hook. And I think part of the reason they let Montgomery go into a lame duck year and didn't sign him is coverage for them. And that's paying off because they would be getting a lot more criticism if this was a new coach, I think, for instance. So I blame them more for that than anything. They wouldn't make a decision on Montgomery. It's a lame duck coach. I don't think the roster is terrible. I'm with you, Keith. It's not perfectly constructed, but I think it's better than a year ago. They should be a playoff team, absolutely. The reason they're not a playoff team isn't the roster. The roster isn't living up to expectations. So let me give you an example. I said Lindholm was pretty good the first three games of the year. I feel like I nailed it. 2 goals and 3 assists in the first three games. So 5 points in those first three games.
So what's it been?
He has not scored a goal since game 3, that Saturday win over the Kings. He hasn't scored a goal.
That was a big goal, though.
He doesn't have a point in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 straight games. Yikes. Here are his shot totals in those 5 games. 2 last night, 0, 0, 1, 2.
A great man once said, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
So he's completely invisible.
Yeah.
And you're paying him a massive salary. Obviously, Jeremy Swayman stinks, right? He's been playing horribly this year. 5 more goals last night. 2 were shorthanded. 1, I think he could have stopped. The other, he didn't have a prayer on. But his overall numbers this year are brutal. We read them to you earlier. I'll read them to you again. He is now 5-9. People will say 5-7-2 to dress it up. He's 5-9. He's lost 9 games. 347 goals against, .884 save percentage. He's also given up 4 or more goals in 6 of those 14 games, including 5 last night and 7 the game before.
He's been brutal because you can only talk about the excuses for so much because it's now 20 games into the year or anywhere between 16 and 20 for all the teams. And for him to be in the 40s in save percentage and 40s in goals allowed, we're not going through every other team and being like, well, that guy allowed a power play goal. That doesn't count. Like that was a penalty shot. And like that was no, that's where he's at. So a quarter of the way through the season, he's been statistically one of the worst goalies in the NFL.
Yeah, and the thing you heard,
or NHL.
The thing you heard 2 weeks ago, well, last time we talked to Razor, the thing you heard 2 weeks ago, oh, well, it's pretty good even strength, but the problem's the power play. Not the last 2 games. Well, six even strength against Dallas. It was 3 even strength last night. 2 shorthanded goals. And again, I thought the first one he could have stopped. Or at least had a chance. That Lori, whatever the hell Lori did last night, that was my least favorite play last night. I didn't love Carlo on the first
Carlo
goal.
Carlo with like a word.
Carlo doing nothing and then kicking the puck into the net on the opening goal, I didn't love.
No.
But that
Lori, it does. You're up 3-1 on the power play. Some say, Keith, many say. Yeah. 2-goal lead, the most dangerous lead in hockey.
Oh, yeah.
You don't want it. Columbus was sweating it out back there.
Not last night for
the
Blue Jackets.
You want a 1-goal lead. You do not want a 2-goal lead. You'd rather be down 2 goals than down 1 goal.
No, they scored 2 more after they were
down. Hockey logic. Lori does God knows what at the blue line giveaway.
No.
And so I'm not going to put that one on Swayman per se. You are still allowed to make the save, to your point.
Do you like Johnny Veal last night?
I don't.
Johnny Veals?
I didn't know who that was. Let me rephrase.
He'll drop the gloves.
I was unaware of, I think it's VL, I think.
Sure.
I think. I'm not super confident in that, but I think it's VL. He's a hacks hack who came up to fight last night.
Yeah, no
He's
stick.
Taken a bazillion.
He's skating around the ice.
Penalty minutes in his career. Which
no stick,
is
no gloves.
Very, very limited. It's never a good sign.
Yeah.
When on the broadcast, they go, he had 100 penalty minutes, 4 straight years in the queue. That's never a good sign.
The guy has had some fights.
The guy
at
had,
what point? Speaking of the broadcast,
one year in San Jose, he spent the whole year in the box. Yes.
At what point do we blame the broadcast team? Because is it the curse of Jack or the curse of Judd? So like, which one? Where do you look at it?
I would call it the curse of Judd.
Curse of Judd. Yeah, but it's also like the curse of Bambino. Like, so he left.
Yeah.
And it was like, I'm saying
it's
we all missed. My
we
point
miss
is
Jack.
We missed Jack.
You think the curse of Judd is too dismissive of Jack?
Maybe.
Yeah. Throw the cat off the cliff.
Like, is it a coincidence that the team sucks now that he's not calling the
you
games?
You know what? I had as much as I've thought about the Bruins and their issues, that is something I had not thought about properly.
Something to add to this. Yeah. Add that to the pile. I don't think they'd be as bad if you're still doing the games.
Curse of Jack, 617-779-7937.
The centers though on this team, like circling back to them for a minute, doesn't it feel like this is the season you thought they would get after Bergeron and Krejci? Last year, those guys weren't there, and they were a lot better. This year, you're like, all you did was add Lindholm to Coyle and Zacha. Like, I think right down the middle, and I know Pastrnak could be better, Marchand could be better, but like the centers have been atrocious.
Let me just follow through on that. This is why you need to shake the team awake. Haggerty was tweeting about this during the game last night. I think after two periods, they had 8 guys with 0 shots on goal.
Nice.
They finished with 6. And his point is there's way too many passengers on the team, people just going through the motions and not giving an effort. That's why you fire the coach, okay? So that bum, VL, was one of them. No shots. Let's see. Johnny Beecher, another bottom 6 player, 0 shots. Like, okay, I can wrap my head around that. Carlo and Lauri. Lauri, you're out there for your offense. 0 shots on goal. He's -4 last night. Carlo, 0 shots on goal, -2. The whole team was minus. The other two I have a big issue with. Pavel Zacha has 0 shots on goal. 1 total shot.
He's not doing
0 shots anything. On goal. David Pastrnak, also a -2. 2 shots, 1 on goal. That was his whole night. It's like you want to see statistically proof that guys aren't invested, guys aren't giving their all.
Mm-hmm.
That's it, right? That you have 6 guys with no shots on goal in your lineup.
Hard to score. Hard to score that way.
What did a great man say again?
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Bruins are certainly testing the limits of that one. So Jim Montgomery at this hour, still not fired. We'll get to the latest on that here on Jones and Keefe. We're going to talk to Tommy Curran. It's a Tommy Tuesday here on Jones and Keefe, WEEI. We'll get to him.
Minute 55 left, third down and 13. Made deep downfield, nobody's looking for it. Cam Kitchens was ready for it, and that's your ball game right there. He'll seal the deal on his third pick of the season.
Jones and Keith here on WEEI. We'll get to Tom E. Curran on a Tommy Tuesday momentarily. We haven't updated this. It happened just a few moments ago. Joe Douglas, GM of the New York Jets, out. Jets fired Robert Saleh as the first head coach out. Now the first GM out is Joe Douglas. As Ian Rappaport notes, it is a full house cleaning in New York.
Rodgers still there.
For now.
Not full
for
house
now.
Cleaning. Yeah, you got all Rodgers guys. I don't know what they could be complaining about.
So where do we have the Jets again? Were they a dead body?
They
in our
were
tiers?
The bottom tier, I believe.
No,
they weren't. They were in Mayo Grown.
Okay.
They were just above that.
Maybe
we should move them down.
Maybe revise that.
Yep, I think so.
If you're seeking that out, that's at Keefe21 on Twitter, at Jones and Keefe on Twitter and Instagram. You can find that there. But it is a Tom E. Tuesday here on Jones and Keefe on WEEI. Tommy Curran brought to you by D'Angelo's Sandwiches, New England Sandwich Shop, and the Sandwich Shop at Jones and Keefe every single Tuesday. FlexCar, save thousands with your flexible car lease at flexcar.com. And by Awaken 180 Weight Loss. If you're hearing this, chances are you're less than 20 minutes away from the closest Awaken 180. A once-a-week lunch break, a quick stop on your way home from work, minutes away from proven weekly weight loss at Awaken180WeightLoss.com. Tommy Curran, how are we doing this week?
Hello, fellas.
Hello.
I'm looking at your tears right now.
Oh, good. Oh,
what do you think?
How do you feel about that? Stand By Me is at the top because that was Christian Gonzalez's. I know you're an insider and you know everything that's going on with the team. We were able to suss that out of him yesterday. His favorite movie is Stand By Me. So that's why that's at the top.
Okay,
I don't
fair.
Know how you feel about the tears otherwise. It seems like you're not loving them if I'm reacting in real time.
No, they're fine. No, they're good. They're good. It's very interesting because I talked to a kid, Ben Baldwin, who does the tears, but he uses Pro Football Focus and also a lot of his own analysis. I'm going to have a conversation with him on my pod. And I made the point this week that the Patriots are now sniffing around the hindquarters of mediocrity. They're still a bad team. Don't make that mistake. Don't you do it. But they are sniffing around the hindquarters of mediocrity, having gone 2-2 in their last four, and actually being in a position where they could have won the four games realistically.
Yeah, well, so that's why we put him in the red zone tier, Tom. Yeah. I think we're
some entertainment value there.
Yeah, we're a little more gut reaction than Pro Football Focus rankings or anything like that, but that's why we put him there. But I was going to reference your column this week, and you just laid it out pretty nicely. Your point, though, is not only are they sniffing at the hindquarters of mediocrity, but that also raises the stake and, you know, puts a bigger target on some of the issues and second guesses that you may have for the coaching staff. So what jumped out to you in that regard this week?
I guess what jumped out to me was the lack of a consistent philosophy that we're seeing from the Patriots, unfortunately. You know, what do you want to be? Who do you want to be? If you want to be a team that gambles, well, then I would say being in a, you know, 7-0 game or whatever, or 10, whatever the score was when they allowed the zero blitz to get past, the risk reward in that Mayo talked about on Monday. So the risk in that is a touchdown, which is what happened. The reward is either a sack, an incompletion, or an interception, which probably isn't going to be a pick six. So is that risk worth the reward? No, it's not. It's a 16-year veteran throwing to an all-pro wide receiver, and you had evidence from week two that even a decent quarterback in Geno Smith will find his all-pro wide receiver and beat you if you leave it open in that way. That's the reason the Patriots really lost that Seattle game, and it's largely the reason that they lost this game against the Rams. You can't lose it all on one play in the first half. And there's, you know, people say, oh, there's a million plays after that. A lot traces back to that. But if you're going to put that kind of risk on something, shouldn't you on inside the five with an opportunity to narrow the gap with the Rams in the third quarter, instead of running Ramondre Stevenson once into the line, twice into the line, and then kicking a field goal, get your athletic quarterback out on the edge on fourth down perhaps, or maybe even on third down when everybody on the planet knows that the Rams are going to stuff that run, and try and make some kind of a play with him where it's run-pass option. So to me, I don't see a cogent, we're aggressive, we're not aggressive. And I'm going to keep babbling here because I thought this was interesting. Remember in 2022 when the Lions came in here and they lost 29-0?
Yeah, and they went for it on fourth down like 8 billion times.
Yep,
yeah.
7 times. They were 0 for friggin' 7. Wow. They went for it on 4th-and-9. They were constantly in the Patriots' end of the field. Dan Campbell later explained, that's who we are, that's how we're going to play. Well, that's who they are now, too, and they're probably the best team in football, at least as they're performing right now.
Yeah, you know, I brought up there was an example from Dan Campbell's first year, and I think it might have been Joe Judge's first or second year with the Giants, and it was on the same day where, you know, neither team had barely won any games, and it was fourth, it was like 3rd-and-20, and Joe Judge ran like a QB keeper to like get a little bit more room to punt. Meanwhile, you flip over to the Lions game, same situation. It was like double reverse flea flicker pass to like a tackle. And you're like, look at these guys. And like they both ended with like 3 or 4 wins. But after watching Sunday's game with the Patriots and the Rams, I'm thinking, man, Gerard Mayo's a lot closer to Joe Judge than he is Dan Campbell.
And it's interesting because if you look at the way that Bill did things, he got to the Patriots with 25 years of head coaching experience. He came with Ernie Adams, his prep school pal, who shared a brain with him and a philosophical brain and could scout teams in a way that was more granular than anybody on the Patriots staff. He came with Charlie Weiss and Romeo Crennel, and they developed Josh McDaniels. So the point I'm making is, in a game, Bill could be more malleable in addition because he had a better team, but because he knew that everyone around him shared the same philosophy. Mayo is now in his first year as a head coach, his 6th year as a coach. He is attached to Evan Rothstein, who might be talented, might not be talented, no one knows. But he is his main conciliary in terms of game situations. And he's attached to Alex Van Pelt, who might be trying to, you know, at the same time he's developing and showing some aggressiveness, also has the roots of, I don't want to screw this up here either, in his past. And you have DeMarcus Covington, who's spinning the wheel and trying to be aggressive like, you know, Bill could be, or Steve Belichick could be, or Mayo could be, or Flores could be, but he's also got Matt Patricia having worked with him too. So like, you never know what you're going to get. You never know what you're going to get. And I think that, as Phil Perry said, and it's not his quote, but if you're going to be a Bear, be a Grizzly. And I think the Patriots at 3-8 should decide to be a Grizzly. Don't friggin' not go for two.
Yeah, they're playing like
a
sun bear.
Tennessee.
Sun bears are the smallest bears. Go ahead, Adam. That's what they're playing like. They're playing like a sun bear.
I'm riled up.
No, you should be.
A koala bear.
Well, so you're about to get into it there, Tom. There's three three decisions we talked about a lot yesterday on the show, and it was not kicking a 54-yard field goal. It was
didn't hate that.
So just because of the wind or because of Sly, why didn't you hate that one?
So early in the game, do you really want to give Matt Stafford? It was a 51-49 thing. I was like, kick it. No, you don't want to kick it? All right, well, Barrage will have a nice punt. Well, he didn't.
No, he didn't. That's true. That makes it look a lot worse.
He didn't.
The fourth
net 22 on the punt.
Fourth and goal from the two. That one's pretty egregious.
That bothered me a great deal.
Okay, same. And then the other one was not having them re-punt to Marcus Jones and being like, well, we got it at the 10. Could be a lot worse than the 10. I'm like, could it be? Like, the 10's not great.
I honestly, that one slipped through my fingers, and I forgot about that because I looked at it like, what? They just ran down the field, too.
Yeah.
They're tuckered.
They were tuckered. Yeah, good point.
So, those were decisions that absolutely deserve scrutiny, but again, you can go to the scheme decisions. There's different decisions. There's scheme decisions and game plan decisions, and there's situational decisions. And I think that the Patriots, when they make a game plan or scheme decision, I feel less inclined to criticize because there's information that they have at their disposal that we might not know. But in game decisions and innovation within the game, I don't mind second guessing. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're going to run a 4th-and-1 trick play, you want to put Jalen Polk on the friggin' field and Javon Baker?
Let me just back it up. Let me just back it up. You're going to run a play. I don't want Jalen Polk on the field. Never mind trick plays. Yeah.
He has twice as many penalties as he does catches since the month of September.
Yikes.
So stop it. Why would you do that? That's a bad decision in the game, in the course of the game. If you want Christian Gonzalez to not shadow Puka Nacua or Cooper Kupp because of something you see in your scheme that you think your fellas are going to be overmatched if you don't do it that way, it didn't work out, but I'm not sure it would have worked out better if you did it the other way. So I get it. You know what I'm saying? That's the stuff that bothers me. Like the 80-20 stuff, like having Jalen Polk on the field, what's the likelihood they're going to execute that? The most important play in the friggin' game.
Yeah.
So stop it.
Yeah, I would say low. He's Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston, joins us every Tuesday on a Tommy Tuesday here on Jones and Keefe. I think you already answered this, but I'm going to ask you again. Your Flex of the Week brought to you by FlexCar. Ditch the dealership and save thousands with FlexCar. It sounded like your Flex of the Game was the Cooper Kupp touchdown second play of the second half.
Well, I like to go with the Patriots flex.
Excuse me. Nice. This is why I should ask and not editorialize. What was it?
No, I love that because we have an open forum here between us, and I think that we all share kind of a brain in the way we look at the game. Mm-hmm. We might have different opinions on it, but I think that we all see it the same way to a degree. But anyway, I like that one. But I'm going to look at the Patriots and say the flex of the game was Drake May on the first series of the game, seeing a safety blitz, addressing it, and throwing to the player in the perfect spot, reading, diagnosing, throwing it. 30 for 40 for 282 with three drops. He's just really friggin' good, and he gets no protection. And it's pretty astounding how well he's playing, and it's more than a snapshot now. So that would be my flex of the game. What did you guys think of the pick?
Oh,
I think everybody put it on DeMario Douglas.
I think it was on May.
Yeah. I do, too. You're a former college wide receiver.
That's right.
Rich Keith.
You got to catch everything. That's my philosophy. But no, that was behind him.
There was nothing but green grass ahead of him.
Yeah. No, he hits him in stride, and who knows what's going to happen on that play. So, yeah, no, that was on Drake May. But I think most people are to the point where, you know, he can finish the game that way, but you still look at him like, oh, man, this guy's better than I thought. Like, look at the fun that he's sort of brought to the table. But clearly the turnovers are the one major thing in his game that he has to get cleaned up, right? Like everything else, I know coming into the league, people are like, oh, his footwork is this and that. I'm like, I don't know. Looks pretty good now. He's able to get in and out of the pocket. He hits guys in the hands. They might catch it. They might not catch it. But it is just some of these turnovers, which I think you see with almost every rookie quarterback.
The only turnover, and we can look at the Chicago turnover, but after we hear his explanation, he was trying to throw it out of bounds and it didn't get there. So he wasn't intending to throw it into a team meeting. So that one I look at and say, let's just throw it out of bounds, you dummy. Mm-hmm. But the only one he looked truly like a rookie didn't know what he was looking at. Like the only one he didn't know what he was looking at was who the hell did he throw it over the middle to? Houston?
Houston he had some bad picks in his first start.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that one was a bad one. The one down the middle where he, Polk, surprise, got under that. That was a pick. But I look at all the picks differently and say, okay, well, it's a downfield throw in the last drive of the game. You don't want that. You want to try and win the game. It's the one thing you can't do at that point. But he's not confused. He's not Sam Darnold seeing mm-hmm. ghosts. He's not running around with no concept of what he wants to do, a la Tony Richardson, Anthony. I keep calling him Tony, the old Kansas City fullback.
Yeah, he's a Pro Bowler, that guy.
Yeah, nice player.
He's real nice.
But he's good. He's a good player. He's fun to watch.
Tom, I'm curious. I know Andy and Christian asked you about this last week. Is Alex Van Pelt safe?
I think so. Based on the returns that he has given through this portion of the season. Yeah, he's developed May. We've talked about it. They've talked about it. I do think that the onus is on the Crafts that every single day they show up, figure out how to make their team better. I looked at it today. The top five salaries among quarterbacks belong to Trevor Lawrence, Dak Prescott, Tua Tagovailoa, and Joe Burrow. And then there's a Jordan Love thrown in there. The combined record between those five teams is 19-44. They're all making $53 million average APY or above. So the bottom line that I'm trying to make is you got to get the most out of May by the time he is a fifth-year player and you start paying through the friggin' nose. So everybody has to be good right now. So I don't blame the Patriots or ownership for scrutinizing that and trying to decide, do we want Alex Van Pelt to be the guy who leads us going forward? And I think that by the end of the year, we'll conclude, yeah, he's going to be the guy.
You know, the Tyquan Thornton era came to an end, and, you know, he's one of those guys. He's an example where very early in his tenure, there were a lot of people being like, oh, this ain't it, and it's going to be a bust. And you'd have pushback saying, it's too early to call him a bust. And then he ended up being a
Me
bust.
Too.
You know, N'Keal Harry, same thing. N'Keal Harry, early on, there were people saying bust. Like, let's give him a minute. Nope, he was actually a bust. So I circle all the way back to Jalen Polk. It's very, very early in his career, but he's actually trending even in a worse path than Tyquan Thornton and N'Keal Harry, it feels like.
Yeah, it 1,000,000% does. The difference may be that they have Drake May at quarterback, and he's young, and he's in the same draft class, and it could help.
Yep.
Let me just roll through for the hell of it. Second round picks like Tyquan Thornton.
Holy mackerel. What a group.
Jordan Richards in 2015, Cyrus Jones in 2016, Duke Dawson in 2018. They didn't have one. Jawan Williams in 2019, Kyle Duggar and Josh Uche in 2020, Christian Barmore in 21, Tyquan Thornton in 22, and Keon White in 23.
No, it's wideouts and corners. Don't draft wideouts and corners. Anywhere else, you're all right. Like, you can go all the way back to
round three.
No.
No, come on.
Go ahead.
Geno Grissom, Joe Tooney, Jacoby Brissett.
Grissom, Joe Tooney,
nice player.
Brissett, week one starter.
Derek Rivers, Antonio Garcia.
No, less so.
Chase Winovich.
No.
Damian Harris, Yadni Kajust.
Not
great. Anthony Jennings, Devin Asiasi, and Dalton Keene. Ronnie Perkins. Marcus Jones and Marte Mapu.
I like Marcus Jones.
I'm not going to get into the first rounders, which would begin with Malcolm Brown in 2015. Just a low yield from the top of your draft.
Low yield
so
is right.
The reason why you're a bad
player. There is absolutely a low yield from the top of the draft.
Oh, I saw a wild stat. You want to hear this stat?
Oh, sure.
I saw that thing. The Pro Bowl one?
Yeah, somebody made a graphic. I don't even know who it is. Pick'em? I don't know what it
NFL
is.
NFL
Pick'em. Draft picks that became Pro Bowlers since 2014.
Mm.
So 10 years, your draft picks, what percent made the Pro Bowl? Do you want to take a stab at what percent?
10%.
for the Patriots.
3.8 for the Patriots.
3.3, which ranks where, Jones?
Oh, that's got to be 32.
32nd. 32nd. The Lions, 19.8% of their draft picks become Pro Bowlers. I mean, that's insane. I don't think you could expect 20%. 10% is more kind of in the air. 8% would be good. 3.3%.
Yeah, not great. So, but Tom, I would say...
That's all Joe Tooney and Mac Jones. That's it.
Yeah,
that's
Mac Jones, that's right. True. It shouldn't even count.
Mac Jones, should not count. But what's most disconcerting is that a lot of that's Bill, and Bill did not draft well, and I don't think anybody's arguing that. The problem is, outside of Drake May, it looks like that's continuing with this year's draft class. I know it's early to just shut it down, but it looks like it's continuing. That's what's terrifying. I blame Bill for all those drafts, but it might not have just been Bill. It might have been Groh and Wolf, too.
1,000,000%. They have skated, and I don't think the early returns on their command of what they're looking at is great. I mean, this was Tyquan Thornton was drafted, and Matt Groh said, if you want to get faster, get fast players. Well, you could have, drafted Skeets Nehemiah. I don't even know who the sprinters are anymore.
Who's the YouTuber who raced?
Donovan Bailey.
No. I love Houston speed or McCare. Something like that. Yeah, who is that guy?
Oh, yeah, that guy. I'm sure he's got
you
good
guys
content.
Don't know Houston McTare, do you?
Nope. No,
Houston
I'm out,
McTare,
out
no.
on that one. Dump it.
I need
Houston McTare was a sprinter in the late 70s. Uh-huh. Right, I'm going to send you that. I'm going to send you Houston McTare.
Okay. No, I'm more
I'll send
like
you I Show Speed on YouTube.
Carl Lewis. Yeah. I can get you there. Michael Johnson was very fast.
Oh, yeah.
Otto Bolden.
The guy began with a Q.
Oh, I don't know that guy. Q? There's a bunch of sprinters. The 100-meter dash was where it was at for a while.
Oh, are you thinking of Theo from The Challenge? He was a British sprinter. Is that who you're thinking of?
No.
No, you idiot.
No.
All right, I'm going to find Quentin. All right, bye.
Let us know. Thank you very much, Tom.
Oh, bye. Okay. Appreciate that. We'll talk to you soon, Tom. Thanks so much. Tommy, you knew it.
Go on a high note.
Pull the ripcord.
I got to go. I'm out of here. I got to see you later, Mike. I got an appointment.
You know what? I don't mind that. More guests should do that. You say, okay, I'm out. I'm done. We're done here. I've got nothing else to bring to the table. No, Theo from The Challenge was a sprinter. On the British Olympic
team. Yeah, I don't remember. I thought you were talking about Theo Vaughn, who was on Road Rules.
No, not
was on
Theo
like
Vaughn.
One or two challenges.
Now,
all right, bye.
A massive podcast now.
Oh, yeah.
Theo Vaughn, yeah.
Theo show's a big show, yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, Theo from The Challenge.
There was a pretty
I also believe he now has a glass.
No, you idiot.
A glass eye, I think, is what he has now.
Theo Vaughn has a glass eye?
No, Theo from The Challenge.
Theo from The Challenge. Well, he was a Theo from The Challenge. He's probably actually Theo from The Challenge.
Yeah, that's a good. He was probably the original.
I think he was on Battle of the Sexes.
It's a good point.
I want to say.
Yeah, no, that's true. What were you going to say? You were about to say something.
No, but I am efforting some scoops here. I might have an update.
What?
I might have an update. I might.
You might or you do?
Well, I'm circling back. The way it was worded is strange.
Okay. Scoops Keith might have an update on the Boston Bruins. So stay tuned for that, and we have Kiefer Madness on the way next.
It's time for Kiefer Madness.
Kiefer Madness!
Richard Keefe, I think it is. Rich Keefe.
Who is that?
How you doing, ladies and gentlemen? My name is Joshua Adams.
What now?
It's Kiefer Madness.
Where is Keefe?
Hey, Keefe, you're a douche.
I was doing Junko Inoshima from Danganronpa.
I'm a firm believer in UFOs and Sasquatch.
That's funny.
Yo, Kiefer Madness is so hit or miss.
Keefe's a nice guy.
Keefe's a nice guy. Okay.
Kiefer Madness?
It's Kiefer Madness on WEEI.
I bring it.
I would have done the same if I had found a kilo of crack cocaine.
I would do what I'm supposed to do on the Purge, kill people.
A man was captured on video using a sword to roast meat in a shopping cart.
We don't need to see the snake.
All right, here we go. Time for the madness here on Jones and Keefe, WEEI. Still efforting some scoops, Jones. I'll get back to the scoops.
You're still nailing down details?
Looking to confirm.
Okay, hashtag scoops.
You don't want to run crazy. I know people think I go fast and loose with it, but I'm not going fast and loose.
Oh, you're doing a good job.
Yeah.
You're sussing out all of the information.
Yeah, that's right.
Making sure to confirm.
Because I do have a pristine 100% track record, so we don't want to screw that up.
No.
Yeah.
And I would say go nowhere. Keith's going to provide an update when he nails down all the details, but a hashtag Scoops Keefe update is in the works.
It's just around the corner. Now, Jones, let's go out to the state of Michigan.
Michigan!
Where a guy once lost the presidential election because he screamed states. Let's find out what's going on out there.
We often worry about technology taking over the world.
It's starting with a little bit of a downer here from this news host.
I do often worry about that.
I do wonder that as well, or think about it, but he's going very kind of down in the dumps. Right off the rip here.
If it bleeds, it leads. You know,
are
Keith,
you
sometimes that's the negativity in the reporting and the news. Yes.
That's true. Are you as worried about technology as this gentleman appears to be? Like, do you think technology is going to come to the point
our
where...
our downfall at some point? Yeah, probably. I don't know that
robots,
I spend as much time thinking about it as this man does, but yeah, it'll probably be our downfall.
Robots,
sure.
Aliens, or some other kind of like sea creature. What do you think takes us down? Like a Kraken.
I think I put robots at the top.
Yeah, like AI robots. I mean.
Aliens won't take me down.
Maybe
because
the whole planet, we won't even know.
Well, I'm just going to their side. I'll team up with them real quick. I'm not sure the robots are as reasonable and rational.
That's fair.
If they're listening now, strike that from the record. I apologize.
Yep, my bad.
To our future overlords. That's fair. Robots probably at the top of the list.
We often worry about technology taking over the world. Now robotics and technology are taking over the food business.
Oh, well, now you've gone too far.
Food business.
Yeah.
What's crazy, too, is because robots don't need food. That's what's crazy. So they know to mess with our food. If they got rid of all food, who would survive?
They would.
They would. Not us. We need food. We need delicious D'Angelo subs to survive.
You're worried about them hoarding the food.
Taking the food away. That's what it sounds like.
I was worried about them like fattening us up.
Oh,
even more so. We're pretty good at that. We're pretty good at that on our own.
Yeah, we're doing just fine, especially here in the United States of America.
Yeah, no, you know, just so we all keel over. Like,
so you're saying
sort of thing. Yeah.
Robots, technology are getting into the food game.
Yeah.
News 8's Adriana Doria getting a look at a new vending machine serving up an American classic.
A new vending machine serving up an American classic. What do you think that would be?
Got to be a cheeseburger.
Cheeseburger?
Yeah.
Hot dog?
Could be a hot dog.
Hot dog?
Pizza?
It's an American classic. Yeah, maybe. Let's see.
And it's real. There's nobody inside making pizzas. It's all vending.
Pizza!
It is pizza!
Pizza vending machines? Doesn't sound right. Doesn't feel right.
Well,
there's certain things in our vending machine down there that I don't trust that.
You want to taste test them?
Taste test
a robot.
I would eat a vending machine pizza for sure.
Look, Tuesdays, D'Angelo's has Tuesday's corner, but
Wednesday?
Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, all sponsorship opportunities available. Robot pizzas.
That's true.
Robot pizza Thursday.
They want to make them. Bring them in. They could. They're self-driving cars. Bring them right in. We won't even have to see a person.
Nope, that's a good point.
Enters a pizza pie.
Maybe. Sounds not that bad.
Yes, you heard that right. Pizza in a vending machine.
Which one should we get? Pepperoni?
They're doing a good, like, they're playing it out, right?
They want
to be, they're right in front of these giant machines. They look like old red boxes. I think what they did was they hauled out some old red boxes.
All the leftover red boxes. Yeah, somebody's like, how do we put those to use?
Yeah.
Like, throw some pizzas in there.
Here we go.
And it works like any other vending machine. With 6 different options, you choose which pizza you want, ranging from $9 to $12.
Not a bad deal for a pizza?
Well, yeah.
Well, 9 options?
Isn't it any good? Yeah, what are my options?
Stuck in those spiral spinning things.
Right. Get stuck there, you're going to jam the machine.
Shake it.
Tilt the machine.
My pizza's in there!
You ever tilted a vending machine
have
and the
sodas
come flying out?
I mean,
I haven't, but I can imagine what it'd be like.
I've seen it done.
I
don't want to say who did the shaking, but I've seen it
done. I don't know who it was, but there was a deal on Dr. Pepper's one day. They're just flying out of the machine.
Yeah.
Then you choose whether you want your pizza hot or take and bake style.
Take and bake.
What's take and bake? like you take it and then you go and bake
it. You take it, you bake it.
Why would you want that? At a vending machine? Like, I'll heat it up later.
Yeah.
Like, no.
Yeah, I'll go to the...
I want it warm.
I'll go buy a DiGiorno's.
You got frozen pizza in there? What temperature is it in there? They got like a fridge and a stove
what
in there?
All I've been able to confirm so far for flavors is pepperoni.
Six flavors.
But what do I get?
Well, what do you think? It'd be pepperoni. It'd be plain cheese.
Yeah, extra cheese.
It'd be bacon.
Sure.
Meat lovers.
Yeah.
Mushrooms.
Buffalo chicken.
Buffalo chicken, probably.
It's
Hawaiian.
Yeah.
And you insert your card to pay.
Card.
And after you...
I understand how a vending machine works at this point. I'm more curious about the pizza and how good the pizza is.
I was just a little nervous she even had to put a qualifier on.
She's like, and then you use your credit card where you store money.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay.
Yeah, I got
and
it.
And after you've done all of the steps and you've paid for your pizza, you wait 4 minutes. And then your pizza is ready to go and fresh out of the oven.
4 minutes. $9, 4 minutes?
Yeah.
Now you're speaking my language.
Oh, you like those metrics?
I kind of do. I'm going to wait around there for a few minutes and get my pizza ready to go. This is her actually using the machine that would include all of this.
The box getting stuck.
Pizza Forno is serving up pizza and vending machines all over the country.
Their West Michigan location in Caledonia off 68th Street has been open since August.
A lot of unnecessary details in this
story. She's just giving you all the info.
Yeah, they're like, whatever you need.
Their locations across the state.
You can eat pizza every day. The vending style.
I wouldn't recommend you eat pizza every day. I mean, you can't. You technically can eat anything
this is what
every day.
I told you, this is what the robots are trying to do. Fattening us up more than normal.
What do you think about a pizza? You probably need a pizza.
Yeah.
But you're on the go.
Yeah.
How am I going to get a pizza?
$9. $9, 4 minutes.
$9.
Good margins.
The vending style concept for the future, it's been done overseas in France for 10, 15 years.
Oh, then it's good enough for us. They've been doing it in France. Jeff, why don't you bring it around over here?
Yeah.
So it's nothing new. It's just new to the U.S.
But how does this technology whip up a fresh hot pizza in just 4 minutes?
So pretty simple, shipping container style. Here's your refrigeration.
Okay.
So there's 70 slots, all labeled.
Nice. Nice.
Sweet.
Nice.
Stamped, robotic. It brings it through the conveyor, through the oven door.
Yeah.
It'll stop it here, and then the oven will open, and the box will go into the oven and flip the lid open.
Okay. Is this the best guy they had to explain this?
He's like, I don't know.
We got our best guy on it. Oh, we're on the news?
I just started working.
My best guy.
Do you think he works there?
No.
Do you think he walked by.
He walked by, saw a camera, and they're like, oh, do you work here? He's like, sure. Yeah. Like, can you explain it? He's like, yeah, box goes in, pay your dollars, and then here comes the box.
There's cheese, a whole bunch of cheese in there. Some dough.
Standard pizza. You'll love it.
Yeah, 4 minutes later, pizza.
Then the robot arm underneath the oven will lift the pizza up into the convection oven.
The company is hoping to expand to around 40 new locations in the state in the next 5 years, serving up the future one pie at a time. In Caledonia, Adriana Doria, News 8.
So in 5 years, there'll be 40 of these in Michigan?
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like quite the takeover.
Well,
I was bracing for.
They're chipping away.
Yeah,
they're chipping away at it.
Half a decade.
Yeah.
There will be 40 locations in one state.
Some good text people said they've had vending machine pizza and it was delicious.
Oh, what'd you go to France?
Yep.
But brag.
Somebody said there's a small person inside sweating out. I don't think that's true. I don't think they have like a little chef in there.
That's like their patented idea.
I don't think that's true.
Keyboy will shut that down.
Yeah.
Somebody said you don't have to tip robots.
A good point.
Mr. Pink from Reservoir Dogs in the chat.
That's a plus one, though.
So there's a coffee place that I go to sometimes that... You walk in and
they flip the tablet on you?
They flip the tablet on you.
Yeah.
2015-10? Yeah. For like coffee, which the person in front of me doesn't even put together. It's the person down there.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, whatever. All the tips go together. But I swear the button, if you hit no tip, which I would never do, but if you
like, are you sure?
They stare at you. No. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
You have to press it firmly four times while they're
looking
at you.
Make a big song and dance like, I am not.
They're like, really,
tipping.
Sir?
You
really, sir?
No, I tip.
I'm like, I'm already spending way too much for a cup of coffee.
I tip.
It's like the South Park episode where Randy doesn't want to give to charity.
Yeah, right.
Would
you like to round up? And you're like, no.
I tip purely out of peer pressure. I don't.
Yeah,
I don't,
no.
You think I want to tip
awkward.
On
it's
my
awkward.
Coffee? I don't want to, but it's better than. I don't want to give you any extra money.
No, I know, but they're staring
at you. But it's better
you.
Than the alternative.
I know.
Here's the thing. Like, if I have to stand up to place my order, I'm not tipping you.
If I have to stand up.
If I'm standing
and then
up to
also
order and receive my meal, I'm not tipping
walk
you.
Walk down the line. I'm ordering a black coffee, and then I add my own milk at the thing. Like, are you going to tip me? They throw me a,
what if you had
a buck.
What if you had a little breakfast sando on there?
Well, then I'm
tip for that?
I usually don't get a breakfast.
But I'm saying if you did,
service.
If there's food involved, do you tip? I mean, I tip either way, but I'm saying I don't
big
want
tip.
To.
Oh,
I
got money bags over here.
I just said
Generous Jones,
pyramid. You got people behind you.
No,
you got people behind the counter. A lot of peer pressure.
It is a lot of peer pressure.
Yeah.
That's why ordering ahead on the app is usually pretty good.
You're noticeably avoiding the answer, though. If there's food, you tip or you don't tip?
It depends. I'm with Billy. Like
I just said, it depends if there's a breakfast sandwich
with
your coffee.
It's like tipping on a takeout order.
I'm asking. I'm not saying a right or wrong.
Takeout
I'm asking.
You want to deliver it to my house? Yes. You want to deliver it to my table? Yes.
I've started ever since 2020.
I come to your counter? No.
This was me being.
Is my coat still on? No.
So you don't care about the peer pressure aspect? It doesn't bother you?
No.
I mean, good for you. I cave to that. Peer pressure's. It's like the most effective thing in the history of man. It's like it works for a reason.
I get bullied
into doing stuff like that all the time.
I became very generous during the pandemic.
Yeah.
And so I would tip a takeout orders then because I figured those $3 would save that company.
Generous.
And
Keith. Like,
here's an extra $5. You guys can stay in business. Mm-hmm. You guys should probably stay in business. Most of those places are closed now, but hopefully they enjoyed my tips.
And they weaseled a little extra, extra dough out of you.
No, but you're right. It's become where every single business is just like insistent upon it.
I'm telling you right now, you're a business owner. You put that screen in front of me, I'm tipping. I will cave to that so quickly, it's not even funny.
Do you just click 20%? Do you click 25%?
You know what? If they, I'll usually 10%? Pick what, no, what I usually do is if there's a middle option, I'm usually picking the middle option. Not money bags.
You are money bags.